at 11 p.m.
Good afternoon and welcome to another half hour of Garden Planet with your hosts, Selena and
Karen.
I can't believe we are now in March, Karen. It's coming into autumn.
I know. We say this every year, don't we, Selena? It just creeps up on us.
It's time to really get started in our gardens if we want to grow something new or plan for spring.
Yeah.
Put in trees and shrubs.
Yep, an exciting time of planning for sure.
I was looking at the lunar calendar for this week and it's looking like it's, there's a new moon on the 7th, which is tomorrow. And that means that it's time to plant above ground plants, or the plants that are leafy, so any crops that are leafy.
Okay.
And also sowing plants and pruning for growth. So like if you're pruning and you want them to grow more bushy, that's the time.
Why is that? So new moon, there's no light at night.
Well, new moon, the start of the new moon is when there's no light, but then it's coming to waxing when the moon gets going into full moon. So it's not waning, getting more light.
As the plants, hopefully germinate, if you're planting from seed, there is more light all around day. Yeah. Oh, less light during the day as, we head into winter.
Yeah.
But at night, you've got more.
Yeah.
Okay. And is it purely based on that?
It's also the gravitational pull of the moon as well.
Wondered so much.
Because the water will be drawn to where the moon is.
Okay.
So when it's waxing, the moon's drawing the water up.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
When it's waning, it's drawing it down.
Right.
So the opposite happens. Like you want to plant your bulbs and do all your root plants, and then you probably want to do weeding and cultivating on the other period.
Yes.
But for this week or coming this week, it's now time to get into all your sowing and planting and
got it. Okay.
Yeah. So that's exciting.
Yeah.
Other things that are happening, going to happen in the coming weeks is the Eco West Fest, of course.
Okay.
Keep an eye out for that. Around West Auckland, there are workshops and things happening.
Mm-hmm.
Community gardens are opening. There's going to be lots of people doing talks and tours and all sorts of eco things.
Eco-related subjects.
Yeah.
So what were the dates for the Eco Fest?
Are
you going to get back to us?
It's like the whole second half of March into second half of April.
So it's over that period. There's all sorts happening.
Yeah, okay. So like every day there's something, so I can't.
Okay, is there a website that can direct us to?
Yeah, just Google Eco West Fest, and there's printed booklets in your cafes and libraries.
Okay.
If you happen to be going for a coffee or going to find a book, there'll be booklets there that have listings of
excellent
everything.
Wow, how do I not know about that? I did have a vague. I know that Eco Fest is around the corner, but I didn't realise it was going to be such a big deal. That's so exciting.
Yeah.
It's so cool.
So that's that. And, one other thing that's really cool is Ranui Community Garden.
Mm-hmm.
Out west again, because we're Westies. So sorry, everyone north, central and south. We just...
well worth a visit, nonetheless.
Come out our way. So Joanne, who's the community garden coordinator there, is holding Rongoa, I hope I pronounced it properly, Rongoa Rakau weekly workshops to do with native plants and their medicinal properties and herbal properties, teaching all about how to use them and harvest them and
all
things to do with that. So that's a weekly course. It happens 9:30 to 10:30 in the Ranui Community Centre on Swanson Road. So Again, you can Google that or Facebook.
Do you have to commit, or can you just show up?
You can show up, but it's best to. I have the email address that you can contact Joanne and ask more about it. It's Ranui underscore garden at hotmail.co.nz.
Okay. Got it.
Like me to repeat that?
Yeah, I think you should.
Ranui underscore garden at hotmail.co.nz.
Excellent. Joanne.
Yes.
Is it?
That's Joanne. She's a lovely lady, so I'm sure she'll love to, you know, teach you all about how to get your...
And knowledgeable too, by the sounds.
Yeah. So things like, for an example, kawa.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite a good native plant to heal certain things like toothaches, and you chew it and, you know, you don't really know because, you know, it's always there, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, she's got all this knowledge to share, so...
And that sounds most interesting. I may well pop by.
Yeah.
Yes.
And one other thing, Karen, we'll get our notices out the way. There is a Auckland Council saying they want to slow the spread of myrtle rust.
Mm-hmm.
And this myrtle, it's types of plants like Pohutukawa is in that family, and Fijo apparently.
Oh, okay.
And it's got this disease that has appeared on this variety of plants is affecting them.
Yes.
So I have this thing here that says, there's these plants also. Do you ever know, or do you know about lily pili, or what do you call them? Eugenias, I think they're called. And they're a type of hedge, and they tend to get this puffy leaf, and it looks really bad. It's like a disease that affects them. And when I was contracting gardening, and we had to clip trim hedges and things, that plant always got it.
Mm.
And we just hated, because it would always come back and we'd always have to keep spraying.
Yeah.
So actually...
Does it look suspiciously like myrtle rust,
does
it?
Yeah. So they've told us you actually get rid of that plant altogether and replace it and plant something else.
The disease.
Yeah.
Is it a fungal disease?
Yeah, it's a fungus. It sort of looks like a rust, you know... Like you get rust on your car, it's like, looks like,
so it actually
little
does
yellow,
look like
rusty things,
rusty coloured growth.
Yeah, it looks terrible.
That's okay. And I think, did it come from Australia? Would I be right in saying?
You might be right there, because the fruit flies are coming from Australia as well.
Okay. Gosh, Australia. What? Oh, dear. Okay, so that's going to... And once it takes hold, I do know that... funguses in the garden are never a fun time.
What they're saying to do is to limit pruning and wash your pruning tools, or, keep them contained. And if you do have it, you need to get rid of that plant. Destroy it.
Yep. Burn it.
Yes. Wrap it in plastic and bury it. It says at least 50 centimetres below the ground.
Gosh.
So it's that serious.
Wow. Yeah. I believe it. Just from some of the fungal diseases I've battled against. Yeah.
And there is also an 0800 number you can ring to report myrtle rust.
Okay.
So that's quite serious.
Is that
serious
if you don't want to deal with it, or do you still, even if you deal with it, do the authorities want to know?
Yeah, they want to know, because they want to know how far it's spreading. Okay. So the number for that is 0800 80 99 66.
Okay.
0800 80 99 66.
All right.
And they have, it's called the Myrtle Rust Reporter app, which you can download.
Okay.
So this is really serious here, and it's like taking over.
It is of, much concern. And, I love our Pohutukawas. What a shame. All our beautiful natives, well, not all, that is a generalisation, but I think of the Kauris, our giants. They just
carry,
they're my personal favourites anyway, those ones. What next? The Corfi? I don't even want to think about it.
No.
It breaks my heart. Yeah.
So that's the bad news. Let's go on to some good news.
But it's good that you've got something there that may, you know, that is possibly a solution to the problem. So it all helps. Yeah.
All right. So, Karen, we had some questions from listeners that we want to answer, and maybe you've got the answers.
Oh, okay.
And so what was one of them that you had?
Okay. Well, it must have been at the end of the dry spell we had last week, Selena.
Yeah.
Because this listener was actually asking about how best to collect and store water. And we have had a little bit of water. This is last week. We were wondering if it was ever going to arrive, and it has.
Hooray.
So we have had a little bit, and I think it's not enough, far from enough. I'm still seeing a lot of cracks in the ground around the place.
Yeah.
So how best to collect it sustainably. Mm. And so I sort of was thinking of rainwater collection. Mm. You can collect rainwater from roofs of homes, garages or greenhouses or any other garden structure as long as they have a gutter and a drain pipe, pretty much.
Yep.
It's that simple.
Yeah.
And then you, with that combined with water butts, have you heard of that term?
Yes. Is it like a drain pipe that goes into
a container? It's like a special container that's set up, with your pipe to specifically collect and store water. They sell them in Bunnings, places like that.
Yeah.
Usually plastic.
Yeah.
So they're designed to collect water, and that can be from either open or closed drain pipes. So that's an obvious one.
Yep.
Other people more people that are using, that are on tank water, would consider using, which is a great way of sustainable way and recycling way of using water, is to use their grey water.
Grey water as in?
Grey water is domestic wastewater. That's what they call that. Yep. So it comes from the kitchen, the washing machine, baths, basins and showers.
Okay, yep.
It's not recommended to use black water. Black water is the wastewater that comes from toilets.
Okay.
Do not, and that's only consigned to the sewage system.
Right.
So do not be using that water on your garden.
Okay.
Also, just a word of caution, household soaps and detergents are harmless to plants, but water containing bleaches, disinfectants, dishwasher salt and any stronger sort of cleaning product should not be used on your garden.
Okay.
Because they can harm your plants
and
damage soil structure.
Makes sense.
Yeah, so just be aware of that. And the other thing, I just did a little bit of research because I don't actually do this, I'm a bit slack, but my mother does. My mother, she'll wash your dishes in a plastic container in the sink, like a big one, and then take that water and out into the garden, she'll go. She's very good like that.
Very thrifty.
Yeah. She's on tank water as well, so so there's probably a bit of reasoning behind that as well. Like,
for those of us already hooked into the town water supply, is it quite an easy thing to just fit a water butt on our garage?
Apparently so. Yeah, if you can afford it.
Yeah, is it expensive? Or?
I haven't ever. Oh, actually, I did look into it maybe a few years back, but I think to get a decent water butt, you and a piping and all that, you're looking at probably a couple of $100.
Yeah,
which is not much to some people and a lot to others.
Yeah.
So I guess it just depends.
And
how.
Also, your guttering needs to be quite sound, and maybe you might need a filter or a leaf
definitely,
litter, you know, getting in.
Definitely precautions to take. I would certainly do that. I even get a little bit concerned. I even think of, I think of my mum who collects all her water from her roof and garage, and she's got two massive water tanks. I often think, what about the birds that poop on the on the roof and things like that?
If you're only using it for your garden,
she uses it
for
everything.
For drinking?
Yeah.
Oh,
everything. Okay. So, and a lot of people do, especially those that are rural. So, but she said there's filters and all that kind of thing. So, yeah, but it's not so important if you're just using it on your garden.
Yeah.
To get all the fancy filters. But,
Okay.
Yeah, so this is just one last interesting point on that, Selena. Grey water should be used as it's produced and not stored, as you would maybe store rainwater.
Okay.
Reason being, if left, it could potentially have harmful organisms in there.
Could it be stagnant and then mosquitoes start breeding?
Well, I guess they were thinking, they wrote more like bacteria. So if you're thinking you've had a bath and...
Oh, true. So it needs to be flowing.
Yeah. You spat your toothpaste out down the tea,
right.
You know, so
germs.
I get, germs. Yeah, that could... So they say it shouldn't, avoid storage when it can, because it can also, get quite smelly as well. So, try and use that as quickly as you can, the grey water.
Okay. Oh, there's one thing that was interesting that I felt with people with tanks and water butts, you need to kind of have it a bit elevated so that you can turn the tap on and use it.
Because
how are you going to get that water if it's just sitting low on the ground, or you need a pump?
Yeah. So that definitely helps.
You need to incorporate it in a raised...
Using the old pull of gravity to help you with that. Yeah. So there's a bit of thinking behind it. But I'm thinking of our tank at the community garden, Selena.
Yeah.
That's currently on the ground because we had a bit of a mishap with its platform. And it's a big tank.
Yeah.
But you think where the tap is, it's right at the bottom.
Yeah.
And we're still able to get that the hose to go up and over into the bath, which we pull. So I think once you get the flow going and keep it going,
but
it's like siphoning, right?
When it gets to a lower level, when there's not so much water, I think that's then when the pressure is not get out.
Okay.
So,
don't think I've experienced that yet with my watering there yet, but okay.
Yeah, but also you need maybe be aware how heavy it is when it's full, because if you've built a platform and it's not strong enough...
Yes, it may well fall.
And one other thing is the material tanks are made out of, like a lot of them are plastic. But I've read that stainless steel is actually better, but then how much does it cost? And so you kind of have different options according to like how much budget you've got.
Yeah, and the plastic, is that because of the chemicals that are associated with the plastic?
Maybe. It's not recyclable, or at the end of its life you can't make anything from them, so they're saying, well, these permaculturalists who are into rainwater harvesting are saying maybe it's not the best for the long term. Maybe it's a good temporary solution
long term. So hard to be clean and green, isn't it?
I know, and it's quite expensive to install stainless steel tanks. And
well, when you think exactly, that's right. And when you think, though, those tanks are out in the sun,
yes,
in the heat, and they say we're not to leave our like plastic water bottles that we drink out of in the sun. So I sometimes think, I wonder if that water is actually safe. But it might be worth doing some research into, listeners. I'll get back to you.
Well, I kind of had been, I think that's a question. It's a good question.
One question leads to another.
I wanted to find out as well, because our garage, gutterings pretty much wasted and rusted.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, all this water's running down and we're not even using it, so we could replace the gutter. But the garage is right at the boundary of our house, so there's only this little gap where you could put a water tank. You need one of those really thin ones. So that's something to take into consideration as well, like how big a tank and can it fit on your property?
Yes. I'm sure you could solve that by using, you could put a drain pipe sort of out somewhere, move it, direct the water to where
true.
But again, it's all cost, isn't it, these things?
Yeah.
And you need to get plumbers involved sometimes. And, I mean, I'd give it a go, but who knows what you'll end up with.
For a low-cost solution, the permaculturists say that maybe instead of installing all these fancy tanks and everything, why not collect and store it, like using the ground? So we've got like clay, most of us have clay soil, which can be quite hard when it gets all dry. You can make a pond. And then that water that is collects in the pond, and you grow sort of pond loving plants around it,
yeah,
like the wet and you can create a habitat for wildlife that enjoy the wet conditions.
That is big thinking.
And you are using that water. It's not going to stormwater.
Yeah.
It's like being reused into creating an ecosystem almost.
So would you create like almost like channels through your garden from that water source?
I was thinking if you had a garden that had a sort of little slope, you could create channels or what they call swales to direct water. When it rains hard, it will run down as
what a cool
water.
Idea.
And then you could excavate a little ditch or even a big pond, and the water can just flow into that. And especially when it rains, it'll, you know, collect.
Wow.
So I was thinking, oh, could I do that? I don't know if I'm allowed with my property, but
yeah,
I think it'll be fun.
If you had your own land one day where you could just go nuts, absolutely. I would definitely be into trying that out.
Because one of the permaculture principles is you sink or spread, store and sink the water. So you want to slow it down and spread it and sink it. So sink means you create something for it to go into. So instead of like putting up a tank and constructing all these artificial things, you use the land as your water container.
Isn't that how the Egyptians used to use, irrigate their crops from the Nile? They would create these
great little channels and canals and ditches.
They look really quite sophisticated when you look at the design. I mean, maybe they
had something there.
Had the permaculture. Common sense of culture.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome though.
Yeah.
It's coming back.
Yeah.
It's got to. Especially with our, lack of water these days.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. There's really no way around it. We need to start thinking smarter like that, Selena. That's great advice.
Definitely.
Okay, Selena, I think it's now time for Plants of the Week.
I'm a lonely little petunia and an onion patch. An onion
patch. Okay, Selena, I'm so excited to hear what your plant of the week is, or plants.
Yes, Karen, I couldn't stick with just one.
I thought so much.
And like in... our singer was singing about the lonely little petunias.
Yeah.
I thought, well, why not talk about petunias?
Why not?
Okay, Karen, did you know that the petunia is the second most popular plant in New Zealand for flowers?
No, I did not. No way.
Yeah. Would you like to hazard a guess what the first most popular flower?
I would go roses.
Nope.
No. Sweet pea?
No.
Calendula?
Not even close.
What?
Okay, well, it starts with P too. So the first most popular, like, widely sold plant in New Zealand is pansies.
Oh, okay.
But it's not exactly the time to plant pansies right now. So we're going with petunias. So,
okay.
Petunias are a sun-loving flower, and they can be annuals or perennials. So you get the annuals that live for a year and then die. Mm-hmm. But you can also get perennial petunias that will live or keep going.
Oh, do you have a preferred?
Well, for someone who wants value for money, I'm going for the perennials.
Totally.
The perennials, you might, the difference if you're looking to buy some at your garden centre, the annuals will be in a separate section and the perennials will be and the perennial section, which will be in probably bigger containers.
It's really interesting. I didn't realise that you could have, I don't know, what do you call it, subspecies, like where they could have to be one or the other. That's intriguing.
So petunias that are annual are under the petunia cultivar label, so that's their name. But the petunias that are perennial are called Calibrachoa.
Oh, okay.
Is their Latin name. Right. So they're kind of a different name, so you can distinguish if you look closely at the label and you say, oh, I want a perennial one. Well, does it say Calibrachoa? Calibrachoa? Yeah. And that means it's perennial. But they kind of look similar, so it can be a bit hard to tell.
But they call them different things. So I can cope with that.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So petunias, people love petunias because they're so endlessly flowering.
Oh, lovely.
And they come in all different colours and you see them planted around like bedding displays, roundabouts.
If
you want a splash of colour, plant them in the sun and they'll just keep flowering and flowering until the frost comes and kills them.
They just make roundabouts so much better, don't they?
Yeah.
I mean, roundabouts are already wonderful, but and they've got such a lovely, delicate little flower and the colours are so vibrant.
Yeah. You can get really dark reds, dark purples or pinks.
And then you've got your yellow in amongst it there.
Yeah. White ones.
Great addition to the garden.
People are breeding them to get all these different colours and make them hardier and easier to care for. So every season, if you go to your garden centre, there's always going to be a new variety.
Oh, wow. And how exciting.
I don't know how, but there's like hundreds of different ones.
Wow.
Just crazy colours. You can experiment on your colour scheme. So if you're making a bedding display and you buy heaps, you can make patterns.
Oh, cool.
Is that the fun thing about gardening and making, creating patterns?
I think they used a lot of petunias down at, you know, at the Hamilton Botanic Gardens and the Indian section where they have...
Oh, yes, the Indian Bar Garden. Yes.
I'm pretty sure they used a ton of, and that was full of colour and pattern.
Yeah.
I would put my money on them using a lot of petunias there.
So some tips for growing petunias is they love sun, but the soil kind of needs to be at least a bit of moisture in there so they can, you know, not dry as dust, but, you know, not like sopping wet. But they can cope with dry because they have these hairy kind of leaves that will retain water. Like it's best if you're watering them not to water the leaves because they can be susceptible to moulds.
Okay, okay.
And just try and water the soil.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're well watered, they'll keep flourishing and growing. Because sometimes, you can see ones that get too dry. Don't water them, but just,
Okay, all right, good to know.
And also they're wonderful for hanging baskets because they trail down and they look great. So that's the petunias.
Lovely.
We have time for another one?
If you have another one, tell us all about it.
I actually put these in the other week. Freesias. And you might see in the garden centre they're all into bulbs now. It's time to plant for spring. Mm-hmm. So you're not going to get the flower, but you're going to get the bulb. So now it's time to get them into the ground.
Okay.
And freesias I recommend because for Auckland conditions, they're just ideal because they don't require a lot of looking after.
Great.
And they will naturalise and keep multiplying and you don't need to lift them up every year.
So for all us busy Aucklanders that don't have time to look after bulbs, freesias are the way to go.
Yep.
Okay.
And interesting thing about freesias is they come in all different colours as well.
Oh, they do.
But the ones that are most centred are the white ones.
Oh,
so look out for the white ones. I don't know why, but white flowers tend to smell more than any other colour of
flower. That's interesting. And would it be the same for roses and other?
In general, white flowers attract, they put out scent more than the coloured ones, I think.
That's so interesting.
These go for the coloured ones. They like the, they see the colour, but the other pollinating insects will go for the smell. So, that's...
And so can you plonk those freesias in sort of anywhere? And are they, if the soil's a bit clayey
says under the eaves of the house, so even if it's dry, you can just chuck them
Sounds
on.
Ideal.
Yeah.
Great.
And
a must have.
Great cut flowers.
Thanks for sharing that, Selena.
Oh, you're welcome.
Very, very useful information.
Hey, Karen, it's all we've got time for, I'm afraid.
Oh, really?
But we have to say goodbye, but we'll be back next week with more gardening tips and advice.
Totally.
Email us at gardenplanetfm@gmail.com.
That's the one.
And we'll talk all about gardening next week.
Okay, guys, see you later.
Happy gardening.